Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 114 of Nerd Pride Radio. 114, wow, this was a tough one. Vault 114 is an unfinished Vault-Tec vault in the game Fallout, accessible only through the Park Street Station. Other than that, it's a lot of phone codes and highways and legal codes, and there's nothing good about 114. It is a boring number. But, you know, Fallout. Fallout saved me. Whew, thank goodness. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, commie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like that brief whiff of ozone you get right when you first activate your lightsaber. Awesome. All right. Before we get into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, though, updates. I told you last week I was going to go to a city meeting for the parking across the street from my house. Because, yeah, right now we park up on the grass, but it's railroad property. The railroad apparently wants us the heck out of there. And so the solution that the city has, and they had this solution before we all got to a meeting, but, you know, they want to have a neighborhood meeting so that we can all talk about it and explore other possible alternatives. But ultimately what they're going to do is they're just going to open up street parking on our street, which has never been there before. So now instead of parking on the grass, I'll just park on the street across from my house. No big deal. And for me, I'm kind of liking the solution. And it's not as convenient as what we were doing. You know, I got, you know, sometimes 4 or 5 cars I got to park over there. But it'll work. And the fact that there will be street parking means traffic is going to have to slow down in our neighborhood, which is nice. Always nice to have slower traffic. And it means a lot of people use this road in front of my house as kind of a shortcut to get across town because it's kind of wide open and easy to get through. And I think with street parking there, it'll be a little more cramped. I think people are going to start avoiding it as a shortcut, which would also be nice. So less traffic, slower traffic, and I still have a place to park, and then the railroad's happy. Okay, I'm cool with all that. But here was the bit that threw me, and I shouldn't be surprised, but my hat is off to these city government employees who were taking care of all of this, because people are dumb. People are so dumb. Sitting there in a town hall-style meeting, where, I mean, it's a town hall, so the whole point is everybody gets a say. And everybody feels like their say is as valid as everybody else's. And sometimes, they haven't thought it through. So a lot of them are the complaints about well, I have elderly neighbors, and they've got 2 cars, and if she's got to park her car across the street, on the street, then, you know, what about, you know, when she's, you know, trying to get out of her car and there's traffic there and she's got to cross that street. And my thought, unfortunately, the city manager said exactly the same thing, is, well, where is she parking now? Well, she parks up on the grass across the street. Okay, so she already has to park across the street. And in fact, in the current situation, she actually has to walk farther to get to her house, and she has to step down off that curb, which, you know, you're telling me she's elderly and she has trouble walking. Well, now she actually has a shorter walk. She's in the street for less time, and she doesn't have to step off of a curb into traffic. She just opens her door when it's clear and then walks across. And yeah, I understand. There's always some dangers to street parking, but, you know, what, and a lot of the questions were just like that. It was like, well, if we have to do this now, I mean, what about kids crossing that street? Well, it's like, okay, well, when you park now, what do the kids do when they get out of your car? You still have to cross the street. It's not like, I don't get it. I don't, and that's just a tiny sample. The rest of it was just, it's moments like that that you're like, okay, I see why some people have a problem with democracy. I see why some people have a problem with giving everybody a say, because you know what? Some people just, yeah, I appreciate your input. I really do, but yeah, kind of I don't. I just, and ultimately, people are talking about how unsafe street parking is. And yet, you know what? When you're parking on the street, there's a greater chance of side swipes. There's a greater chance of somebody taking your door off when they come by. Yeah, there's a greater chance of that because you're actually on the street instead of up, you know, on the other side of the curb. I get that. But then there are other benefits that balance that out. And when he comes down to it, he says, look, the railroad has already told us we have to get our cars out of there. The railroad has said they're going to start calling the cops and having people ticketed because that's something that they could have done all along. But fortunately, they're willing to work with the city manager and give us some time to come up with a plan and make sure everyone's informed and all this. So you know, they're being nice about it, but the city is basically saying, look, your choices are either you can park on the street across from your house, or you can have no parking. I mean, that's really the choices we've got. Well, can't we put an alley back behind our houses? There used to be an alley there. Can't we put an alley back in? Well, okay, let's pull up the city map. Okay, you got to get all your neighbors to agree that we're going to tear down all of these fences. We're going to have to tear down those three sheds, those two garages. Are you going to get all your neighbors to agree to that? And me personally, I'm like, yeah, you know, alley parking, sure, it would be nice to be able to park that close to my house. It would be safer and more convenient, but also, when you're parking off of an alley, that means, okay, the last 15 feet of my backyard now turn into mud because that's where the cars are parking. I don't want to give up 15 feet of my backyard to mud. That's not really in my best interest. It does not improve my property values. No one was thinking. No one was thinking. But fortunately, when we got to the end, it was like, okay, well, you know what? We're going to go with street parking. And yes, we'll have the cops were there, and the cops were like, yes, we'll set up some speed monitoring stuff and make sure that the speed limit is still appropriate for there. And yes, we'll make sure the railroad knows that they're taking care of all that property now. We'll make sure they keep it mowed and it looks nice. And yes, we'll take care. But man, it was an interesting 90 minutes of my life. That's what I'm saying. So, I'm glad I went, and I'm glad I know what's going to go on now, and it was just educational. But you know what? That's not what we're here for. Let's get into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, add it to my master list here in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Okay, straight into the master list. First up, it's my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. Okay, first off, I did play Pathfinder again this week, as I do every other week. And, we're actually going to move it up. I'm going to get an extra bonus session next week. But anyway, I played Pathfinder. It was awesome. We're still in the house of the ogre kin, and we're clearing it out, and the place is just foul, absolutely foul. My character wound up taking more damage than she ever has. I think I've been hit. This is maybe the second time in six levels. The second time I've taken a hit, and I wound up getting hit by this horrible tentacled mold monster thing, and it was horrifying, and also means that it was going to swallow me. So fortunately, everyone else took it out before that happened, but it was scary and it was fun, and we were having a great time. My only complaint now is I think it's about time for me to be seventh level. I'm pretty sure seventh level should be right around the corner. I keep waiting. I keep looking ahead at the stats. I keep getting ready. I love leveling up. Oh, man, I love leveling up. Which, by the way, educational bit for me in that I've always felt like leveling up is not that big a deal. That really it's about the story. It's about the characters and the story and the interactions. And to a degree, that's true. But the idea of advancement in a game, even if it's just a little bit of advancement, is actually really motivating for players. And now, as I've had so much time as a player recently, I've realized the importance of that. And so a lot of times when I've designed games and kind of, you know, built some spur-of-the-moment ad hoc stuff, I usually don't bother to develop rules for character advancement, and I'm realizing that's a mistake, because I really should. And I need to be including that, because again, highly motivating. I mean, so much fun. Who doesn't love leveling up? And I guess, and again, this is the longest game I've played as a player. So, you know, I don't know how much the thrill changes when it's way more incremental, where, you know, if I play in Shadowrun or I play in some other games where you're just getting just a little bit of karma or a little bit of experience or a little bit of whatever the points are called. And so, you know, it's, you know, every couple of missions, oh, I get to level up this skill 1 point. Oh, I get to move this piece of equipment up 1 point. As opposed to, you know, playing Pathfinder, Dungeons and Dragons, where, oh, I've just gained a level. Holy crap, I get to advance everything all at once, which is huge. I mean, I get new spells, I get more hit points, I get more bonuses to hit, I get better saving throws, I get more skills, I get, you know, everything happens all at the same time. So I don't know how different it is when it's incremental, which seems, you know, the incremental version is way more realistic, I would think, or, you know, as much as you're going to get realism in a role-playing game like this. Maybe verisimilitude is the word I'm looking for. Either way. But yeah, character advancement is so cool. All right, anyway, that's Pathfinder. Homeroom, my brother's online bulletin board game. It is in the Nerd Babble section of our forums. Right now we're creating characters. We've got 3 of them out there already. We're going to be playing a group of 7th graders in school. Again, the last one of these games that my brother ran turned into a horror movie, and it was frightening, and it was a ton of fun, and we wound up failing miserably because half of us were supporting characters intended to be funny and intended to not be heroes, and so therefore we didn't do anything really heroic. We spent a lot of time avoiding heroics, if at all possible, and therefore we never really got to the proper solution, and so in the end we wound up killing one of our office workers, and one of our guys went to jail for it, and apparently I'm demon-possessed, my character, by the end of the game. And so, you know, we came up with a resolution that didn't involve us just, you know, living in limbo for eternity, but we also didn't come out with a real win either. So, but it was so much fun. So much fun, whether we win or lose. So much fun. So, I don't know what my brother has in store for Homeroom. Again, I don't know if it's going to turn into another horror show. I don't know if it's intended to be, you know, some sci-fi fantasy thing. I don't know if it's just going to be us playing. You know, for all I know, we could be 7th graders during a zombie invasion. We could be 7th graders during some sort of natural disaster. I get the feeling that, you know, something momentous is going to happen that will then have to motivate us to do something. But I have no idea what it's going to be. So I'm really excited, and I bring it up to you guys because if anyone wants to play, you don't need to know rules. You don't need to know how to build a character. You don't need to know. There's nothing you have to learn before you show up. All you have to do is come to the Nerd Babble section of my forums, look for the thread entitled Homeroom, a bulletin board game about whatever it is. And you go to the Homeroom thread, and then you just post in a character that you want to play. You make up a 7th grader and post up a brief description and personality. And the ones of us who have done it already, yeah, you know, it's like 3-4 paragraphs. You come in and say, yeah, here's my character, here's what she looks like, here's the stuff that she's interested in, you know, kind of some emotional stuff about her. You know, you want to have a real character, but just make up a 7th grader. It's not that tough. Hell, play yourself as you were in 7th grade, and you know, go from there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I encourage you to join. We've got, I think, 6 players who have agreed to be in. But people always drop in, drop out, things change up. So feel free to come join us. And I'm sure he's willing to take new players even up into the first couple weeks of the game. He did last time. Up until the action really kicks in, you can kind of fill in as you go along. So come join us for homeroom, really. Still more gaming table. Still playing the Fantasy Movie League and still really enjoying it. And I finally have settled into a spot where, my first 2-3 weeks of the game, I was completely lost and kind of a dolt. And finally I caught on to how to play. And then once I got the hang of it, then it turned into, I had about 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks, more than that, where I got really obsessive about it. Where, I'm coming up with the spreadsheets and I'm plugging in numbers, and it is every day I'm looking for new information and reassessing my thoughts on how the week is going to go and how the movies are going to perform and what the price points are for me and all this. And it got to be a little much. I put a lot into it and I was having fun doing it. But also I found out that no matter how much work I put in, there's just always factors that I can't quite get a grasp on. And so I have wound up now, they set up, the new week is always set up by Monday night. And so Monday night, Tuesday morning, I take a look at it. I crunch some numbers. I spend about a half hour on it. And I go, okay, well, based on this, here's the way I'm going. And then I let that sucker sit all week and I do nothing about it. And then Thursday night or Friday morning, I check the updates on numbers and, okay, how'd the previews do? What are the new theater counts for all the movies? Anyone got any new information? Okay, maybe I'll make a change, maybe I won't. And then I go into the weekend. So I'm not obsessing about it, and I'm not putting in the hours and hours of time like I used to be, which is a good thing because I can't afford to spend that much time on one game, as much fun as it was. And I'm enjoying it, but I'm also, more than the game itself, which is still fun. Can't wait to see how things go. But the community over there has actually turned out to be really cool. There are a few people over there that it just, it's fun to just hang out and just see their thoughts on stuff. And it turns out that, I post up a thread about, who's into tabletop gaming and who's into podcasts. And it turns out that, they're all just a bunch of nerds like we are. It was refreshing and cool to see that, even though we're all coming together for a fantasy movie league, it turns out that, we also all have a lot of interests in common. Not everybody, but most of us. And everyone who's posting up, I'm finding, quite a bit of common ground with them. And it was very cool. So I'm enjoying being part of that community, and I've made some efforts to kind of bring them over to the Nerd Pride side of things, setting up a fantasy movie league forum over there and kind of not panning out as well as I want. But I think part of that is because I'm not putting in as much, that first few weeks when I was, obsessing about it, and I put up a new thread every day about, okay, here's what I'm thinking about for this. Here's what I'm thinking about for this. Oh, what if we change these numbers? And I put up a lot of material on my website, and a bunch of them came over and they commented, and it's really nice to see them. And now that I'm kind of relaxing about it, not putting as much effort, and I'm not seeing them come over. So, maybe they'll come over to participate in some of our other discussions. Maybe they'll come play homeroom. One of them, Angry Geek, is coming over to play homeroom. So, Angry Geek, by the way, has his own podcast. It's called Angry Geeks Versus. He is one of, I think, 4 Angry Geeks, 3 of them. And every week they'll have their topic and they'll discuss it, and it's all nerd stuff. And it sounds like it's right up our alley. And they have recorded now 10 episodes, not released a single one. Oh, I'm getting so frustrated. I really want to listen to this podcast now because he's a decent guy. He's a really smart guy. I enjoy his opinions. He knows how to make things fun. He's got good conversations. So I'm imagining that their podcasts are going to be a lot of fun too. But I think what he said is they're all 3, spread out across the country. And so they're all recording, they'll talk to each other, but they're each recording their own audio separately. And then they send all the files to one guy. One guy has to sync them all up and put it together to an actual podcast and do all the editing. And I think that part is probably pretty intimidating. And so they've got 10 episodes recorded, not a one published. So hopefully we'll see that soon, and I'll try it out. And hopefully I can recommend it to the rest of you, because like you say, decent guys, sounds like the kind of thing I'd be interested in. Fingers crossed. I'm hoping it turns out to be good. I'm always looking for new podcasts. So cool on that. The last one, and this is just a minor thing for my gaming table. I have already told you how much I Really enjoyed my experiences playing Dominion, Pandemic, and Small World when I was at Gen Con. Loved those games. I have not bought any of them. I have them on my wish list for Christmas. But they're also all available at a local bookstore, music store thing that we have here in town. And here's the bit. The store is closing. They're going to be closed the day after Christmas is their last day of operation. So that will be their final blowout, everything must go clearance. And it is the only store like this that we have in town. It's Hastings is the name of the bookstore. And so, you know, it's half of it's a bookstore, half of it's video and music. But they have lots of gaming stuff. They have comic books. They have shelves upon shelves of nerd stuff. Not just stuff like ThinkGeek, but it's stuff from ThinkGeek. So it's that kind of thing. So there's a whole shelf of Doctor Who items that you can buy, a whole shelf of Minecraft stuff, a whole shelf of Star Wars and Star Trek and all sorts of nerd gifts. And it's a cool little store, but it's also way overpriced. Everything in it is overpriced. And plus I have to pay tax, which I don't have to do on Amazon. And so that is part of the reason why they're closing is they can't compete with online sales. They just can't. And I get that. And it's sad that, you know, the local brick-and-mortar store has to close down because of that. But I'm going in now, and they have, again, they have Small World, and they have Dominion, and they have Pandemic. And the store just went to, everything is 20% off. Last week it was, everything was 10% off. Now they just, a couple days ago, moved everything to 20% off. And I'm looking at it, and even at 20% off, all three of those games are still more expensive than what I pay on Amazon for them. You want to support a local business, but it's a chain store, so it's not even like it's really a local business, but still, you get the point. You know, you want to support the brick and mortar spaces. You want to support this store here close to you, but man, with their regular prices, when I can get it for $34.95 on Amazon, am I really going to pay $50 plus tax in person just to support a local store? I mean, to buy those three games, am I going to dish out an extra $50 for the three of them together just to support a local play? The $50 is a lot of money to me. It's like a whole nother game and a half. So I'm just waiting for the prices to come down, and I'm just going to go snap it up on clearance. In fact, I'm almost thinking 20%, again, is still more expensive than what I'm paying on Amazon. I'm thinking of going down during the week when I know there's going to be a manager there, and just picking up the games I want and saying, hey, look, even at your discount that you've got now, it's still too expensive for me. Here's the prices I'm finding on Amazon. Tell you what, why don't I give you $100 for all three of them, and I'll just walk out the door with them right now. It'll be a good deal for me, and look, you know you're going to mark them down this far eventually. Just let me have them now. Let's see if I can actually haggle in this day and age, and I think I can. I bet I can get away with it if I can talk to a manager. You can't do that with anybody else. But if it's a manager, I bet they'll let you go with it. And I was amazed at this, because Yancey made this point to me a while back. He said, you know, you can actually haggle on most stuff. You can go into stores, even though, yeah, they've got their prices marked. Yeah, you're not going to be able to get away with it at Walmart, obviously. But most privately owned stores, you know, if you can talk to a manager, or especially if you can talk to the owner, you know, you give them a good convincing argument, you can usually haggle people down on a lot of stuff. And then he gave me a bunch of examples where he has actually done this. I'm like, wow, that is, something you don't even think about in our modern, you know, U.S. economy, is the ability to just walk in and haggle like you do for a car or something. But it works. So I think I may go try that. Because again, Dominion, Small World, Pandemic, I need those three. I need them really, really bad. I think, I'm trying to come up with which one would be the most important to me. And I had so much fun playing all of them. I mean, Dominion was killer. Pandemic, also great game, but I think Small World may be the most vital, because I think that's the one that my kids would like the most. Oh, I love Small World. Anyway, I'm babbling. I've used up a whole lot of time. Let's move on.
And now for something completely different.
That's right. It's time for something completely different, which is stuff that I don't have a category for yet. And this one, I don't even know what I'm going to say about it. I have this bit on my pocket mod, and I'm not actually using it, but I wrote down uncomfortable topics. And uncomfortable topics are things that just, it's usually something that's controversial. It's not, you know, when I talk about feminism, when I talk about religion, when I talk about politics, there's a lot of stuff that it's just, it's uncomfortable to talk about because our people are so divided about it. It also is the ones that I get usually the most positive feedback on is when I talk about stuff like that. And this one, I don't think anything I'm going to say here today is necessarily controversial or divisive. But I've decided with uncomfortable topics, I like the idea of trying to do at least one of them every show, which I don't at all. I mean, maybe every third show I do something like that. But I'm trying to work more of them in, but man, they intimidate me. They're so hard to prepare for and so hard to, because I don't do a whole lot of scripting. I'll jot down, at most, I'll jot down like 6 or 7 notes for a topic, and then I'm composing the words as I go. And sometimes, especially when it's a difficult topic, I trip over myself a lot. But the attacks in Paris, this is what I'm going to talk about right now. And we've all seen the news. We all know what happened. And I guess I wish that the reaction from so many people wasn't so predictable. I wish that our election cycle wasn't so stinking long so that everybody and their dog feels like they have to turn this into a political question so that they can score points against whoever their opponent happens to be. I wish I wasn't seeing things about these terrorists targeted France because France has very restrictive gun laws and therefore they knew there wouldn't be any opposition. If only some of the people at that venue had been armed, why, this never would have happened. If someone in the crowd could have shot back, then this would have been over. It's not about gun control. It's not. You know, this was the worst, the absolute worst, a Facebook comment where someone says, "Hey, France, how's those refugees working out for you?" Oh, you son of a bitch. Seriously? Seriously, you're going to blame the victim? I mean, honestly, they were asking for it. It's what France was wearing. Is that what you're saying? You can't do that. It just makes me sad. The whole thing makes me sad because even if this is the potential cost to us for allowing refugees in, and I don't think it is, okay? But even if it is, it's actually a cost that is worth paying. It's a cost that we need to seriously examine and seriously take on because what's our option? I mean, I will grant there's a point there that, you know what, when all these refugees come flooding out, if France had just locked down their borders and said, "Sorry, we're not helping anybody, we're not taking anybody in," is there a chance that they would have been safer? Is there a chance that maybe this would not have happened the way it did? Maybe. But what you're saying then is because we're afraid of something like this, we're willing to let thousands die. We're willing to let millions suffer and live in fear and die because we don't want to assume any sort of risk to ourselves. Is that the kind of people we are? Is that the kind of people we want to be? From the conversations I'm seeing, yes, apparently for a lot of us, that is the kind of people we want to be. Is that essentially it's not our problem. It's not our problem. And look, I'm a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite because what have I done? I've done nothing but talk. All right. I have not given my time and money to go help these refugees. I've not done anything but make commentary to people I know about my opinion on how the situation ought to be handled. But I've taken no real action. I've done no real thing here. But I still feel that, you know, just basic human decency, the the idea that these people are suffering and we have the resources to help make things better. We have the resources to help people and protect people, and therefore, shouldn't we? I wish it wasn't so political, and I don't have a solution. I don't have answers, because here's the thing. Just like every other terrorist attack that we feel gets a little too close to home, we have an instinctive reaction that we want to lash out. That they come after us and something happens, and so therefore we want to lash out. Ted Cruz is already talking about how, you know what, maybe we shouldn't worry so much about collateral damage when we go over there and bomb them, huh? Maybe it's time for... Really? Really? We don't have enough collateral damage already? What are the numbers on how many of our drone targets over there? How many of our... What are the numbers on how many of them turn out to not actually be the people we wanted in the end? It's a lot. And he's saying, you know what, maybe we just need to kill more of them. Maybe if we kill more of them, we'll get a few more of the ones we actually want. Maybe if we start scaring them a little bit, then they'll be afraid to pull this on us, which, by the way, won't work because we don't know who they are. We don't know where they are. You can't just go out there swinging randomly and wasting resources and throwing your weight around when we can't even find the people we want. And for Ted Cruz to say that as if, oh yeah, well, the gloves are off now. Well, what were we before? What have we been doing all of this time? Yeah. How many of our rights did we voluntarily give up in order to try and make ourselves safer? And how many rights did we give up unintentionally, as a consequence of trying to protect ourselves? Where are we going with it? See, this is why I don't do difficult topics. It's because it gets me worked up, and I realize I'm spinning my wheels. It's something we need to think about, and I wish I had a solution. I wish I had a course of action that we could take that would make us safer. A course of action that we could take that would reduce the amount of killing and suffering going on. All I know is that killing is wrong. Bottom line, killing is wrong, and I don't know how to address it. I wish I had an answer because, you know, locking down our borders and tightening up our security even more and making it harder to travel and making it harder to do anything that we want to do is, you know, just giving up our freedoms and allowing even more intrusion into our internet habits and our phone calls and our communications of all sorts. Is that the answer? It isn't. It isn't, but I don't know what is. So, again, the reaction was predictable, and it's going to continue. And as a result, we're going to put together some sort of resolution. We're going to put together some sort of plan of action, and we're all going to jump into the fray and decide that, well, here's what we need to do now. And I don't know. It just feels like I'm not the only one spinning my wheels. You know what I mean? Okay. I'm depressed enough. We've got to move on. What would make me happier? My science corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Actually, this is just back to smart cars and self-driving cars because you know how much I love them. And a Google car got pulled over this week. How cool is that? Pulled over? What? How is that possible? The story, as I understand it, is Google car is driving through whatever little town it is that allows Google cars, and this is where they're doing their experiments. And Google car apparently is not allowed to go over 25 miles an hour for safety reasons, and so it was going 25 in a 35 zone, and traffic was really backing up behind it, and so a cop wound up pulling the car over and making way for everyone else to get through. But, you know, there was no one to issue a ticket to because, well, it was just a Google car. It was driving on its own. And to me, first off, the image of that is just fascinating. That's I find this really funny. And now Google is claiming, you know, because they've had a million miles and never gotten a ticket on a self-driving car. And to them, they're saying this still counts because, look, the whole point of this experiment was to see how they do. And those, the artificial 25 mile an hour speed limit was forced on them for safety reasons. So therefore, it's not the car's fault. If the car could have gone at the speed limit, it would have, but it couldn't. So it got pulled over. But to me, the idea that this car is driving along, blocking traffic, and so the cop flicks its lights on, puts on its siren, whatever it does to pull it over, and the car pulled over. It just pulled over. I mean, yeah, as if, yes, officer, what was there a problem? I mean, it is, and I was just baffled by that. Really? You can pull it over? And I thought, well, no, it has to know. It has to be, it's right there in the road rules that if it sees an emergency vehicle coming, lights, sirens, whatever, if it sees an emergency vehicle, it knows it needs to pull over for emergency vehicles. You always have to give up your right of way to emergency vehicles. So therefore, it knows that if it sees a cop's lights on, it's got to pull over. So it did. Holy cow. How cool is that? All right, but it opens up conversation again. And I can't remember whose article this was. I saw this recently. But someone was talking about what happens when the vehicle needs to make a choice. When the vehicle has a situation where there is no positive outcome and it has to make a choice. So, for example, I've been in this situation. You are cruising along at, you know, 60 miles an hour, minding your own business, perfectly legal, and a deer darts out in front of your car. And when that happens, you know, it's completely out of the blue. Yes, you were watching for deer, but you know what? If it's night and a deer comes charging out of the trees on the side of the road, it can easily wind up right in front of you without enough time for you to stop through no fault of your own. You have done nothing wrong in this situation. And the safe thing to do in that situation, I've been there and I had to do it. I slam on my brakes. I made sure there was no one behind me so I wasn't going to get rear-ended for it. I slammed on my brakes as much as I could, and I plowed right into it. I thought about trying to swerve, but I'm on a two-lane highway, and if I try and go around it, I'm going to wind up at this speed with, you know, slamming on my brakes and trying to swerve at the same time. I'm going to wind up throwing myself in the ditch. I'm going to roll my car. I'm going to kill somebody. That is, so I made the choice that, look, I slam on my brakes, and I hit it. That's all I did. And I wound up killing the deer, and it went flying, because, you know, when I've got ton and a half of vehicle slamming into a 90-pound deer, it's going to pick up some distance, and it did. And I felt horrible. And, of course, you know, the front end of my car is trashed, van, and trashed. And it was horrifying, but, you know, it's a choice I had to make, and that was the right one. That's what they instruct you to do is, look, don't try swerving. Don't go swerving to avoid an animal. You know, plowing into it, yes, that's terrible. You're going to hurt your car. You're going to hurt the animal, but you'll also stop safely, and you won't die, all right? And eventually, self-driving cars are going to have to make that choice. Eventually, self-driving cars are going to do that on their own. And you know what? And if it plows through an animal, you know, just as I had to do, I'm not going to knock it. That is, you know, that's the right choice to make. But what happens, this article posited, this unnamed article that whose source I can't remember, what happens when that choice is not about an animal, but what if it's about an 8-year-old who's darted into the road unexpectedly? And we have to imagine it's nighttime and it's a situation where it's a kid on a bike who has darted out from the side of the road and, you know, wasn't illuminated and wasn't, you know, and like the deer, you're in a situation where you're not doing anything wrong, but now the vehicle or you, if you're the live driver, but somebody in this situation has to make the decision on whether to hit this kid, which will almost certainly kill them. I mean, we'll slam on our brakes as much as possible. And to tell you the truth, the car is in a better position to do this because the car can safely brake at maximum deceleration way better than you as a human can. It can judge things and has measures that you don't, and it can decelerate better than you can. All right? But eventually, you know, somewhere along the line, it's going to come up with a situation where a self-driving car has the point of, okay, do I hit somebody or do I swerve and potentially kill my passengers? All right? Or, you know, where swerving is either, you know, it's either I wind up hitting this or if I swerve, I hit that. These are my only choices. What do I do? And eventually a self-driving car is going to have to make that decision. So that it has to make a decision that will probably injure and or kill somebody. And it's going to happen. It has to happen because that situation comes up. Now, hopefully, with self-driving cars, hopefully they're better than we are. And hopefully that decision comes around way less often for a car than it does for human beings. And for human beings, it's extremely rare. But it's bound to happen eventually. And what happens when it does? What does that do to the system? I don't know. I don't know, because that's the sort of thing that the first time a robot kills a person, either through, you know, intentional action or intentional inaction, because it weighed its possibilities and here's what it came up with. You know, very much like the whole motivating factor behind Will Smith's character in iRobot is the robot dives down to save, and it can either save Will Smith or it can save a little girl. It has a choice, and it decides that it's going to save Will Smith because that's the most likely chance of success. He had the greatest chance of survival. That if the robot chooses a little girl, then there's a greater chance that both of them will wind up dying. And that's what angered Will Smith so much and motivated his angst. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. I just, it's going to be interesting. And again, and like I say, also, because lots of people, when I bring up self-driving cars, they talk about, well, yeah, but, you know, what, you know, do I have a chance, you know, if there's an emergency, if something goes wrong, you know, can I take over the wheel? Can, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I think that's pretty much standard, is the idea that, yeah, you'll have a self-driving car, but you have to be in the driver's seat if you're going to take it out on main roads. And if something goes wrong, you always have the option, if you wanted, of taking over. But I also think that the times that things like this are going to happen, the very rare times where maybe human judgment would have been better than robot judgment, the accidents that may happen or may be caused by self-driving cars, by self-driving robots, I think those accidents and those instances will be very rare and will be far outweighed by the savings in lives and property damage if I had a robot driving my car most of the time, once they get this all perfected and you've got robots driving, how many accidents are going to be just avoided outright because robots are way better at this than we are? How many lives are going to be saved as a result? How much more efficiency will we have in the system, saving on fuel economy? And when you've got robots all coordinating together, how much faster are we going to get to places as they can kind of manage traffic on their own as they go? So much will be saved in lives and time and money that, yes, there will also be some incidents on the side, and there will be some bad things that do happen, but isn't it far outweighed by the lives saved otherwise? I mean, look, it reminds me of when I was in high school, I knew a guy, and I heard this story from different people at different times, but I had one guy who was just adamant that he could never wear a seatbelt because he had a buddy who was in an accident, and blah, 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 gas cap flew right through his blah, blah. If he had been wearing his seatbelt, he would have been dead. I'm like, yeah, okay. First off, that story's a lie. But even if that story were true, the one guy that gets killed because he was wearing a seatbelt, and he would have lived if he didn't have his seatbelt, is far outweighed by the hundreds of lives that are saved by seatbelts, and those people would have died if they didn't have one. I mean, yes, you can imagine some bizarre scenario where having a seatbelt on causes more damage than not, but it's far outweighed by the millions of cases where people are so glad they had a seatbelt on. You know what I mean? Anyway, enough of that. I can't believe how many segments I put down here. I have got way too much stuff here. I'm going to put off the unnamed history segment, and do I want to do Nerd Rage? Okay, I will. I will. If you guys get the little ones out of the room, make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd Rage came flashing back. And I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Okay. In fact, I'm going to do it. And I think it's one I've already done. But I was just reminded of it again. I think I did it years ago. Homeopathy. Homeopathy is the idea that, you know, something that could cause you damage or harm, if you take something similar to it, either, you know, something, the damaging element itself or something that mimics those symptoms or whatever it is, but you take just a tiny bit of it, it protects you against whatever it is. It's the idea of like vaccinations. Yes, smallpox will kill you, but if you get inoculated with cowpox ahead of time, that was the original vaccination, then, you know, you get inoculated with cowpox, you get inoculated with a small dose of dead disease, whatever it is, then it protects you from the larger effects of the disease itself. And so homeopathy builds on that kind of mindset and says that, you know, you're allergic to bee stings. Well, guess what? We take bee venom and we dilute it down into tiny portions. And if you take this medicine, it helps protect you against your allergies. It helps protect you against your whatever. Okay. And first off, it's mostly crap. But second of all, unlike other holistic and new age and herbal medicines that are out there, there's a lot of stuff out there that's garbage and untested. But there's also some stuff that maybe has some benefit to it. And I can see, you know, the people that do the herbal stuff. The mega vitamins, there's a lot of evidence that says that stuff is not helping, but, all right. I can at least see those. All right. You're putting something in your body because you feel it has positive effects for you. And maybe it's unproven at this point, or maybe it's, I don't buy into it, but I understand if you do. But homeopathy, that a lot of homeopathic medicines, they brag about, okay, they've taken the venom or the whatever it is, and they've diluted it down. And then they will brag about the number of dilutions that they put it through. So that, okay, we take it, we dilute it down, and then we do it, we take a sample of that dilution, and then we dilute it again, and we take a sample of that dilution, and we dilute it again. And to the point where they've actually said, you know, when they break it down and they're talking about, oh yeah, well, we've diluted it through 8 cycles, okay, you do the math on that and you figure out, okay, that's one part for every quadrillion, meaning, if you had, 100 bottles of the stuff, you would have one molecule of the substance that you say helps you. So therefore, the vast majority of the bottles are nothing but plain water. They literally, in the math on the dilutions that they're doing, they're telling you they're giving you plain water. That it's almost impossible that you're going to wind up with some medicine in yours. And what medicine you do have is, there's nothing in it. Nothing in it. So it's not even medicine. It is placebo. They're selling you a bottle of placebo. All right. That's what homeopathy is. And for those of you, by the way, who are into homeopathy, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. Okay. So if I've got any listeners who swear by a homeopathic medicine, I'm telling you, you're swearing by a placebo effect. I'm just guaranteeing you that that's the truth. All right. Now, you want to talk to me about your vitamins and your herbals and your alternative Eastern medicines and stuff like that? I'll listen to those. All right. I'll give you a fair hearing on those. But homeopathy, I will not. That's not even possible. So homeopathy is a lie. It is a sham. And the reason I bring it up yet again is I was just driving by the pharmacy up on the north end of town, where this guy, he used to be my pharmacist. He used to work in the big grocery store pharmacy where I get my medicines. And he had a disagreement with them. He went off and he started his own pharmacy. And I've only been in that place one time. And when I went in, it's got all sorts of herbals and alternatives and blah, blah, blah. And he has a whole shelf of homeopathic remedies in there. And I just, you know, because I know the guy. I know him by name because he was my pharmacist for years. And I didn't ask him. And I keep meaning to go back and ask him. But, you know, I don't know that there's necessarily going to be any value to it. But I keep wanting to ask him. Dude, seriously, you have a pharmacy degree. You went to school for sciences. You have a bachelor's of science degree at a minimum. You have a bachelor's of science degree plus whatever else you had to get. You are a practitioner of medicine, and And yet you're selling homeopathic drugs out here. Not even drugs. You're selling water. You're selling water and calling it medicine. And you know, you have to know, because you're a man of science. You're a pharmacist. You went to school for this stuff. You have to know that that's a lie. You have to know that you're selling nothing over here. And yet you still sell it. Why? Why? How do you in good conscience do that? And I assume that the answer is, well, there's a demand for it, and so therefore, no, you can't tell me that. You can't say that, oh, you're willing to sell bunk just because there's a demand for bunk. You're selling lies, and you know that they're lies, and you're doing it because, oh, well, it'll make me money, though. Oh, then you're no better than people. You know, it's snake oil. It's snake oil. It's bad. And so anyway, I got worked up about that because I was driving by his pharmacy and it started rattling around in my head yet again. So if I've already done the homeopathy rant years ago, and I think I might have, I apologize for making you guys sit through it again, but oh, it burns me. I should go down there and ask him. I really should. Actually, I should first go down there and see if he still has them on the shelf, because maybe he's pulled them. Maybe he's changed his business model. But I'm probably not going to do any of that because I'm lazy. So there you go. All right. I am all done with the meticulously planned portion of this podcast. That means it's time for a couple of Pod-O-Matic. Oh, sweet sassy molassie. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. If you want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. All right. Before I go on, I don't know if you could hear the dinging going on there. That was my wife sending me Facebook messages, and apparently, because we were just having this whole discussion about France and ISIS and everything earlier, apparently France is bombing the crap out of ISIS right now, which I don't know any details, but since I just talked about it, apparently France has already decided on an appropriate response, and they're bombing somebody. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'll probably talk about it more as it comes up, but man. Maybe I shouldn't even have brought this up, because now, see, here's the problem, is it just like before, I bring up a very depressing topic, and then I switch right into fun mode, and I start into my next topic, because that's what my show is. It's a lot of fun mode, and so now I've just rolled, and it's, by the way, it's a 17. Will you guys forgive me for switching back to fun mode to go into the Pod-O-Matic? We're only going to do a couple of them, and then we'll get to listener betrayal. But you guys will be all right with that? We're cool? All right. Because 17... from R2 here is, it's from Ronster. All right, Ronster, what can you do to compete with France bombing ISIS? He says, oh man, what is your life's dream? And he even puts dream in quotes. That is a great question, because I don't know. My life's dream is, I like what I'm doing. I like my life. I like my kids. I want 10 years from now to look back and think that I've raised a decent family and that I've got good kids, and I want them to be out there being productive, happy, healthy citizens who are good people, that I'm proud to call them my sons and to look at what they have created and what they're doing with their lives. That's really my biggest dream. And on a more material level, a more personal level, look, I would love to do some more game design stuff and have some more published stuff and have stuff that people read and play and enjoy. I always thought I wanted to be a novelist, and my brother is turning into a novelist. Well, he is a novelist because he's published 2 books already. And I always thought I wanted to do that. And I wouldn't mind writing some short stories, or writing a novella, maybe even a full-length novel at some point. That's not really as much my dream as I would love to publish a really cool game. I really would. And the more I look at it with Kickstarter and other stuff, there's possibilities out there. Am I going to be motivated enough to get off my butt and make one of these happen? I hope so. I hope so. But right now, I'm young enough that I'm using, you know, my kids as an excuse that, oh, busy family, busy lives. And, you know, maybe some of this time that I put into playing Fantasy Movie League and recording this podcast and some of the other things I do for myself, maybe if I converted some of that time into, you know, productive writing and game design and this kind of stuff, maybe I could come up with some. But right now, I'm not in the mood to do that. Right now, I really enjoy what I'm doing. I really enjoy talking to you guys. I really enjoy putting out this podcast. It makes me feel good. So I'm going to continue doing this. But yeah, my dreams are not huge. Not at this point. So like I say, I'm happy making what I think is a positive difference. But yeah, okay. Anyway, you know what? Let's go. Oh, yeah, speaking of positive difference, speaking of Fantasy Movie League, we just had in the community over there, there was an argument over a movie and something. Anyway, I wound up, just as an aside, I'm like, you know what, we need some positivity injected into this. And so I complimented the administrators over there. I said, hey, guys, great job on the pricing this week. Is this maybe the best week ever? Because they really did. I mean, it was, oh, the movies were just too close to call. And then when the actual results came out, they were actually even closer than we thought they'd be. And it was really impressive. I mean, the guys who put together Fantasy Movie League, and when I say guys, it's not gendered. It could be women for all I know. They have done a really good job and they've really improved their game. They've gotten better at what they do as time goes on. And, I'm really enjoying it and I appreciate it. And so I put up a bit that says, hey, wow, is this the best pricing week ever or what? And then I get some guy who sarcastically has to come back and, yeah, well, technically the pricing isn't dependent on blah, 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 blah. You can't really say that it's good pricing because, oh, seriously? Is that what we're doing? And so I re-explain myself and what I'm doing, and he's being more pedantic. And of course, you're only getting my side of the story. I'm sure his side of the story is that I'm a jerk, or that I misunderstood him, or that whatever. But since I'm the only one who has a podcast and can give a side of the story, clearly I'm the good guy here, right? Okay. And so this dragged on a little bit, and you know, I don't want to make a huge thing out of it. So I wound up kind of... I gave sort of this passive-aggressive kind of backhanded way out of my thing. So I basically left him in a position where his choice was either he gives in and agrees with what I'm saying, or he argues with me, in which case he automatically looks like an asshole. I mean, I created a situation where he had no win. He either gives up or he looks like a dick to everybody on that community. And it was unfair. I mean, it was unfair of me to do that. I mean, yes, he was being pedantic, and yes, he was picking apart stuff that didn't need to be, and it was needless, but it also wasn't, it was a good move on my part. Man, it was a good move, but it's not the sort of thing I'm proud of. And so afterwards, I was talking about it in a private area, and the more I discussed it, the more I'm like, ah, crap, I gotta go apologize now. Damn it. I do, because even though he's wrong, I'm still convinced that he's wrong, and that he was being overly nitpicky. But just because the person's wrong doesn't mean it's okay for me to jump in and treat him that way. It was an unfair move, and it made him look really bad. And I was being needlessly provocative. I mean, again, the way I phrased it, it sounded like I was being a super nice guy, but when I did it, I knew what I was doing. So I went over and apologized. And of course, as always happens, when I treat someone like a jerk because I think they're being a dick. All right. And I still think, you know, he'd be kind of a dick. All right. But I treat them badly because of the way they're acting. And then I feel bad about it. So then I go apologize to them for like, hey, look, I still think you're wrong and I disagree with you, but I shouldn't have handled it that way. I'm so sorry. He, of course, takes that as, haha, I've won. Well, all right, whatever. That's fine. You know what? I had to do it for me and to set a positive example. And part of me then, because, you know, as I did it, I'm like, hey, look, when all is said and done, at least I'm setting a positive example for my kids. And I'm showing them that look, here's how you're supposed to treat people, and here's how you should handle these situations. And you know what? When you screw up and you cross your own lines and you do treat someone unfairly, even when you think they completely deserved it, when you do have bad behavior of your own, here's also how you fix it. Here's how you handle it. Here's the positive example we're giving. And I feel good about that. So, you know, ultimately, yeah, you know what? He wants to have the last word and he wants to feel like he won. Whatever. It's not like it hurts me. It's not like but then I got so meta on this that I'm like, okay, yeah, but now that I've explained myself and said that that's why I did it, now I look like, I mean, I'm only doing this in private, but now I look like an even better guy. And am I just doing this just to make myself feel good? It reminds me of, on Friends, did you ever see the episode where Phoebe's trying to prove that there's such a thing as altruism, that she's trying to prove that there is such a thing as a completely selfless act. But the problem she runs into is that once she finally does something that's completely selfless, well, yeah, she feels good about it because she won her argument. And was she only doing it so that she could win an argument? Ah, crap. It is selfish. Ah, crap. Anyway, I got really meta on myself. But that's beside the point. Oh, thank you for saving me, R2. 47. 47 is from Lisa, my wife. My wife, who loves to do this to me, says, you took German in high school. That's true, I did. 3 years. I can count in German, and I can tell you that Kartoffel means potato, and Apotheker is pharmacist. There you go. That is the limit of my German. She says, say, I am a sixth-level half-orc bard who has attention deficit disorder in German. You can use a translator if you have to. Wink. Ugh. All right, hold on. Let me pause while I go get the Google Translate up. Just a second. Okay. I also had to take a brief break to go on Facebook and tell my wife that she sucks. God darn it. Do you know how long the word for attention deficit disorder is in German? Yeah, because it's all one word because they're German. Ugh. So for those of you who know German, for those of you who are part German, for those of you who have any connection to the German language, I apologize for what's about to happen. But here's what Google Translate tells me. First off, I am a sixth-level half-orc bard who has attention deficit disorder. All right, hold on one moment. I'm stalling. I would like to note that I spelled, my wife spelled, and then I copy-pasted. She spelled orc with a C, which is the way I typically spell it. And Google Translate, when it puts it into German, automatically corrected that to a K for the German version, which I think is pretty cool. So it recognizes orc. All right. Here we go. Ich bin eine sechste Ebene Halborg Barde. Barde. I sound Swedish. That's terrible. I can't do it in German. I don't have a good German accent. All right, let me start over. Ich bin eine sechste Ebene Halborg Barde. Is it Barde? It's got an E on the end. All right, I gotta do it all in one shot here. All right. Ich bin eine sechste Ebene Halborg Barde. Aufmerksamkeitsdefizitstörung hat. Oh my God, that was terrifying. Terrifying. You guys know how I have performance anxiety about these sorts of things. Accents, foreign languages. I'm shy. Oh, that was so tough. All right, one more to clear the palate. 25. 25 is from, let's see. It's from Akiva. Hey, Akiva. He says, chess or go? Why? All right. I like go better. I don't know. There's something about Go that is easier for me to look a few moves ahead. It makes more sense to me. Chess is one that, I don't know if it's my attention deficit disorder. I don't know what it is. But chess is one I learned it very early. My dad liked chess and he taught me really early and we played a lot of it. I can enjoy playing chess, but I can't look 2, 3, 4 moves ahead. I can't keep it all in my head to predict what the other person's going to do and play against that. I'm just not very good at it. I would like to be. I feel like I should be. Not really. In fact, my dad and I, he taught me chess. We played chess for a while. But what my dad liked better, and ultimately what I liked a lot better, was backgammon. I love a game of backgammon. You know why? Because backgammon is a game of luck and skill combined, such that, you know, you play a few games, and eventually even a novice will sometimes beat an experienced player just because, oh, wow, that's weird. My vocal fry on it looks really weird on the sound thing. Anyway, doesn't matter. But there's enough luck in it that even a novice is going to beat an experienced player once in a while. It happens. But in the long term, and we would play many games, and we kept score, and we kept track of these forever, the experienced player is going to win more often. It's very clear if you play 10 games, 20 games, 100 games, it's very clear who the better player is, but the novice player, the less experienced player, still has a chance. And my dad never went easy on us. He was very competitive. He never went easy on us. And his thought is, look, you're not going to get better if I just give you a win. The only way you're going to get better is if I challenge you. So I'm always playing to the best of my ability. And he always did. And I got pretty good at backgammon. I really like backgammon. And he's still, if we sit down and play 10 games, he's still going to beat me at 6 or 7 of them. But I love playing backgammon. It's a fun game. All right. Akiva says, I would choose chess for the simple reason that I can't wrap my mind around Go at all. After playing well over 100 games, and that's not an exaggeration, I still make the same idiotic beginner's mistakes in Go. That just shows how idiotic I am. I'm not a good chess player, but at least it makes sense to me. I can understand that. But again, like I say, chess makes sense to me, but I just can't, I just can't think that far ahead. I don't like the process for chess. And I understand that Go has a lot of that same thing that, you know, whether it's Go or Pente or Connect Four, or tic-tac-toe. I mean, these are all variations on the same thing. It's the idea that you have to look at where they're going to go and you have to see a few moves ahead of time. And for some reason in Go, it's just easier for me. It's easier for me than chess. And I don't know why, but it is. And I enjoy that a lot more. As a kid, I played a ton of Pente. That was the Americanized, you know, Parker Brothers or Hasbro or whoever published it at that time. It's their version of Go. It's simplified down, but it is. I played tons of that and loved it. And so now I have my own Go set. I can actually see it from where I'm sitting right now. And I love Go. It's a lot of fun. So anyway, that's my choice. You know what? That's the end. We're over an hour, so I'm just going to leave it to GLaDOS to give you guys a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's In the Garage, She Blinded Me with Science, as performed by William Shatner, and I think that was it. All the songs I use on my podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, just like the one I keep my master list on, go to pocketmod.com, get instructions for printing and folding completely free. You want to do something nice for my podcast? Subscribe to it in iTunes or Pocket Cast or whatever subscription service you use for podcasts. Give it good reviews. Recommend it to your friends. That's the big one. If you enjoy it, please spread the word. Let other people enjoy it. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. If you want to contact me, email mike@nerdprideradio.com, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, on Twitter @nerdprideradio. But the very best way to get in touch with me all the time, come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. So sign up there, you send me a message, we'll hang out together. We're best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. All right, at the beginning of every cast, before I do anything else, I go out to Facebook and my website, and I post up threads out there to say, hey, I'm recording. anything you guys add to those threads, I read off right here at the end of the cast. So here's what you guys were thinking while I was jabbering on about stuff. Hold on. Say, done. This is my website first, from nerdprideradio.com/forums. There we go. The first one is from, it's from my brother Kyle. Kyle says, so, when I said that it seemed like no one wanted to keep going with Movie of the Week, you were one of the two people who told me you wanted to keep doing it, and then you didn't watch the movie, and I suspect you haven't watched the most recent one. What gives? I'm lazy. I did not watch the last movie, and I also have not watched this one. And I mean to, I want to, but I haven't. It's just been weird. So I'm really, really sorry, Kyle. I feel horrible for that, and I'm sorry. But I will. For the rest of you out there, Movie of the Week, Movie of the Week comes out every 2 weeks. We have someone from the club picks a movie, and then if you want to comment on it, if you've seen it, come in and just talk about it. We like to break it down and analyze it, what we liked, what we didn't like, and it's a lot of fun. And I just, oh, man, this makes a month that I haven't watched the Movie of the Week, doesn't it? Oh, man, I should really watch this one tonight. What is it? It's Something Into the West? I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, doesn't matter. I think it's an Asian film of some sort. I don't know if it's Chinese, Japanese, whatever it is. But okay, I'll watch it. I'll watch it. I'll get on it. I'm sorry, man. I don't know. Just didn't get there. Trying to finish up Breaking Bad, and I can't do that either. So I'm a little disappointed in myself. I'm sorry. Mrs. Darks follows up with, "Hey, Kyle, how's that book coming? I can't wait to read it." When is book 3 coming out? Because that should be, it's probably going to be what, the end of the, well, no, because the last one came out at the beginning of this year, or early in this year, so, yeah, the next one, it's at least a year in between, right? Anyway, yes, my brother has written 2 books now, he's working on his third, hopefully, fingers crossed, soon. DM Darks follows up. DM Darks says, "Why does Kyle have the same facial expression in every picture he takes of himself? Is this a trained reflex, or is he just part mannequin?" Okay, lots of people have that same picture face, that they always have the same face in every picture. And sometimes it's really, really striking when it's on Facebook, that it's always the duck lips, or it's always the head tilted, turned to almost a 3/4 shot, and you realize, you know, after like 7 or 8 of them, it's like, what, you pose that way every time you see a camera in your face, don't you? Kyle? But Kyle's same facial expression is usually, isn't he just like a grinning idiot in every picture? It's always him just happy to be with his family. Because Kyle is typically, it's a selfie with his family in the background. So you see him taking the picture, so his face is right up front, but then everyone behind him, whether it's, you know, in their van or at a party or at the water or whatever it is that they're doing. But it's a huge group of people behind him all having a great time and mugging for the camera. And then Kyle's big grinning face right up front. At least his isn't one of those horribly affected poses. I mean, at least this is a good one. I hadn't noticed that it's always the same, though. I should look. All right. DM Darks also then says, all right, F. Mary Kill, Pathfinder Edition. This is, all right, my choices are, all right. My choices for the F. Mary Kill, Pathfinder Edition are Kaliana, Dothan, and Dwin. These are 3 characters from our Pathfinder game that we're playing now. Kaliana would be the super hot, redheaded rogue who is half-elf and, just gorgeous. That's what she does. Dothan is my character, and she is a half-orc, so physically not as appealing, but also really high charisma, super charming bard. I've talked to about her a million times. You guys know who she is. And then Dwin, who is the muscle of our group, big and tough and down-to-earth, and carries a big pole arm. So of those 3, F. Mary Kill. I think the obvious answer is Kaliana's the super hot one, so I would take her for the F portion and have a wild night of passion with Kaliana. Dothan, if you overlook the fact that Dothan is me, All right, and let's look at her as a separate character. She is the character of Dothan, who has a lot of me in her. Clearly, I have a lot in common with Dothan, and I think we would have a great time living together forever because, you know, like I say, we share a lot of interests. Would that mean we'd get on each other's nerves? Maybe so. And that only leaves me to kill Dwin. I'm sorry, Dwin. You're my favorite of all the characters out there. I really love the character of Dwin, but that doesn't mean I want to have sex with or marry her. So, sorry. But yeah, that's just how it's going to have to go. And then there's me posting up to say, done. So, let's move on over to Facebook. Hey, Noah, how are you?
Good.
What page are you on?
144. I'm taking a quick break.
144? That's amazing. You actually made some real progress.
Thank you. I'm in the maze of... I just got to the point in the Maze Runner book where they escape the maze, and Chuck just said, yeah, Albie's going through the changing.
Oh, okay. Don't give anything else away, though. Yeah, he's reading Maze Runner, and he's really, really enjoying it. But this was a busy week, and he wound up getting behind. He needs to have it done by the end of the month for school, and he fell a little bit behind. So he has read now almost 50 pages just since we got home here. While I've been recording, he's been reading, and he's doing really, really good. So you'll be caught up in no time. Not a problem. On to Facebook. Facebook is... Here we go. All right, I have comments on my... I know I have comments, but now I have to post. Come on, pull them up, pull them up. Oh my gosh, I have a lot of comments. Let me write my reply. Done.
Three by the same person, Sarah Beth.
Yes. Sarah Beth starts off by saying... okay, they're in chronological order. Okay, Sarah Beth starts off by saying, do you also enjoy chocolate-covered cashews? I have never had a chocolate-covered cashew. I bet I would like that. Here, don't lean on the table, though, kiddo, because every time that table creaks, it comes up through the microphone. All right. For a while during the 7.5 years I worked for the Advance Auto Parts, we sold both plain and chocolate-covered cashews. Odd thing for an auto parts store to sell, but my goodness, those were like crack. We sold more to each other than customers bought because they are so, so good. I have, as much as I love cashews, I have never had a chocolate-covered cashew. I bet I would love that. I need to go find some right now. Speaking of Advance Auto Parts, I was just there yesterday because I had to put new brake pads on my kid's car. And I've never done that before. So it takes, you know, first time I've ever done it. So I didn't have a C-clamp. And it took me a while to figure out how all the parts lined up. And, oh, what's this little odd springy clip thing? Oh, I get it now. Okay. But, you know, fortunately, I had YouTube. I got to see a couple of examples. Kind of knew what I was doing. I got in there, and it all worked out, and I got the brake pads changed, and I was very proud of myself. But here's the problem. I just went out earlier, because after I got everything fixed, we then had to leave, because my wife's sister has been in the hospital. She had some surgery, and so we had to go visit her. And I didn't have a chance to drive the car. And I told Aiden I was going to let him take it to work, but I'm like, wait. I haven't driven it yet. It always makes me nervous when I fix a car, because I shouldn't be able to disassemble parts of a car and put it back together and have it work. It seems like it should be more complicated than that. So as much as I was sure I did the thing right, I told him, nah, don't drive it. I'll take care of it. You know, let's make sure it's good. So I went out today and I started it up and thought, okay, we're on the grass because I can still park on the grass. And there's another car parked right in front of me. So I'm like, all right, let's put it in reverse and we'll just go just a little bit and hit the brakes and see what happens. So I put it into reverse, and I immediately hit the brakes, and nothing happens. I have no brakes at all. There's just nothing. And so therefore, since it's still in reverse, the car is accelerating backwards. I'm not putting on any gas, but it's going faster and faster. I'm like, oh, there's a stand of trees behind me. Oh, crap. So I throw it into neutral. So, okay, good. I'm not accelerating. It's starting to coast now. The trees aren't that close. I should be all right. You know what? Let's pull the emergency brake just in case. And, oh, the emergency brake. That's right. His doesn't engage all the time. It's a really old car. I know. I should have gotten that fixed. Fortunately, it coasts to a stop. Nothing gets hit. I'm like, oh, this is bad. I did something wrong. So I put it into forward and then back into neutral. So I get just a little bit of a boost. I do that like 3 or 4 times so I can kind of pull it back up into our spot. And I get it parked. And then I'm just about to get out, because obviously I've done something wrong. I'm going to have to disassemble the whole thing and start over. And then I realized, wait a minute, wait. I get my foot back on the brake, and I just pump it a few times. And after like 5, 6, 7 pumps, I can feel, oh, good, there, it's starting to catch. Okay, there we go. Now it's all pumped up. I've got everything back in place. Sure enough, put it in gear. I drive. The brakes are fine. I did it right. But scared the crap out of myself. I completely forgot that, you know, because I had to, open everything up, and so they weren't engaged, and so they weren't. But once I got them pumped, they're fine. All right, I fixed the brakes. I'm a magic man. All right, Sarah Beth then says, when is NPR going to be on Instagram? Oh, Nerd Pride Radio on Instagram. I can barely manage Twitter, okay? I got Facebook down. Twitter, I can't bring myself to pay attention to Twitter. Instagram, that's like a whole other thing for me. I've never even looked at Instagram except where people post something on Facebook or Twitter that then takes me to Instagram. Other than that, I never look. So possibly never, but I don't know. I'll look into it. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll do one of those things that just automatically, you know, when I put something out on Facebook, you know, when I put something out on social media, I know that there are apps out there that will just automatically put it out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you want, all at the same time. And then that way, however people want to follow me, they can follow me and still get the same information. That's probably the smart thing to do, isn't it? I'll do that. All right. Then it's Nellie. Nellie says, howdy. Hope you had a good Veterans Day. I did. I had the day off, and so I slept in. I did some laundry. I finished cleaning my garage. I felt pretty good about Veterans Day. It was a good day. She says, have you had sushi before? That's an odd lead-in from Veterans Day, but okay. I have had sushi. She says, did you like it? No, I didn't. And what's your favorite? I don't have one. I have tried sushi. Jacob and Aaron. Aaron's his fiance. Jacob and Aaron love sushi. If they have a date night, sushi is their restaurant of choice. They will go sushi every time. And so therefore, they've taken us out a few times, and a couple times we've tried sushi with them, and I've tried different stuff. And, you know, California roll, it's not bad, but there's just nothing about it that I enjoy. I'm not a big fan of fish in general. I know sushi doesn't have to have fish. But I'm not a big fan of fish. I'm certainly not a fan of seaweed. I just don't enjoy it. It's just not something that's for me. And he's even, you know, he's come to our house and he has his own sushi mat and he's got all the stuff and he can make his own sushi and does on a regular basis. And he tried making stuff for us and tried putting some different things in it so that we might find something we really like. And, it's just not for me. I wish, but yeah, not for me.
The first time I tried sushi, I was like, bleh, bleh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Noah's with me.
Sushi.
Noah's got my taste buds. I'm a very picky eater, and Noah unfortunately inherited that from me. All of his brothers love fruits, vegetables, a variety of stuff. Whatever deficiency I have in my taste buds that causes certain things to just set off my gag reflex, poor Noah's got the same thing. It took me until I was, you know, 25 years old before I could start eating a whole salad, because lettuce just couldn't take it. But I can now, and I've tried a lot of different things, but I'm still a little limited. So you got a long road to hoe on this one, kiddo. I'm sorry. I know. It's my genetics. You're screwed. Sarah Beth then says, how awesome is Nellie? And then she gives me the answer. Doesn't even give me time to guess. Says, the answer is extremely, totally awesome. Absolutely love Nellie. She is wonderful. My Gen Con would not have been half the experience it was without her around. She was great. And she just got a new job. Working in an awesome game store, which I obviously have no opportunity to visit at this point, but God, I would so love to. It would be cool to go hang out.
Also, Nellie and Sarah Beth's symbols look very much alike.
Yes, they both have the France overlay. It's the French flag laid on top of their pictures in support of the victims of the recent bombing tragedy in Paris. So that's what they're doing, is they're all supporting the French people and the victims over there.
That's nice.
So, yes, it is nice. And then DM Dark says, so you've eaten those Birdie Bots every flavor jelly beans, right? Yeah. The gross ones included? Yeah. Don't the booger ones taste awesome? No. And what kind of pitch did they have to make to get someone to do that? Hey, Jimmy, go eat your boogers and tell us which one of these jelly beans tastes most like it. Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah. Yeah, look, I get the experience. It's an experience for kids. It was not made for me. I am just, my niece, for her birthday, got a gift of, it's a game, and it's done, it's not with birdie bots, it's with Jelly Bellies. And they, for each thing, you wind up, and I don't know how the game is played, but we didn't actually play it, she just gave us samples, that they have identical jelly beans, they look exactly the same, but, you know, it might be buttered popcorn, but it might be moldy cheese. So when you take one, you're taking your life into your own hands. Might be odd, because I love buttered popcorn. It's my favorite Jelly Belly flavor. I love the buttered popcorn, but moldy cheese, ugh. And here's the problem. I fell for it, and I took one time, and it turned out to be it was moldy cheese. And holy crap, if it didn't taste exactly like what I imagined moldy cheese would taste like. And it was gut-wrenching. It was vomit-inducing. It was, you do not want, oh, God, and I know it's just a jelly bean. It's a jelly bean, and it's just a flavor that is, yeah, it's a nasty flavor, but I know it's perfectly safe. There's nothing harmful here. But it was so foul that she's like, okay, now try these. I'm like, no, you fooled me once, shame on me. But, wait, fool me once, shit.
Fool me twice, shame on me.
Thank you. I was going to go into a President Bush imitation, but you beat me to it. Yeah, no, that is not, ugh, that was terrible. So, God darn it. In fact, I was so bad at that, I couldn't even do the Bush screw up. So I guess Bush is even better than me in this case. And then that's the end. Now we are all done. So, got anything else you want to add, Noah?
Well, I'm pretty much having fun reading.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you do need to get back to it. You still got to get caught up. But the book is awesome, right?
Yes. And during a pause that my dad had to do, I looked at my toes and I said, oh, they're so wrinkly.
Yeah, he's reading in the bath. And yeah, he's been in there a long time because he is a wrinkled little prune. So anyway, say goodnight, Noah.
Goodnight, Noah.
Say goodnight, R2. Goodnight, everybody. Have fun.
Sorry, I had to.